She's going to be telling us what's on the news, but you can guess because you're psychic, Stephen.
I reckon they're going to have maybe six stories on the 7 o'clock news tonight on the bailout crisis.
Six, you reckon?
Have you been hacking into my computer?
Yes, I have spies.
This is
how many minutes do you do six stories over?
Well, let's tote it up. It's probably, we're devoting probably six to eight minutes to it tonight.
I reckon that's about right. About one minute for each percentage point fall in the Dow.
I've got a text message asking to explain what one point is. And I couldn't do it because it's not my natural habitat. Can you do that, Stephen? It says, can you ask someone what a point is on the Australian Stock Exchange? What's a point?
Oh, it's just an index. So they've created an index where each company has a certain amount of points in the index. So the index today fell by 208 points. It's just an arbitrary figure, an arbitrary index created by boffins who put together the market to measure it. And
does that make sense to you, Tamara?
It does the way he explains it.
The key point is don't worry about points, worry about percentages.
Worried about percentages.
So today the fall was just under 5%.
Right.
And you know, it could be 3 points or it could be 3 trillion points. It's still the percentage move that is what actually matters. And all these different markets around the world have various arbitrary indexes which measure the size of the fall in points.
Right. So do you see doom and gloom, Stephen Mayne? Business advisor to the stars, shareholder activist, amongst other things.
I bought 4 stocks this afternoon in the last few minutes of trade. I reckon it's a good buying opportunity. There won't be a global depression and everything will turn around when we have a new president, is my call. I think it's a good buying opportunity. I think that the chaos of the last 24 hours will force some sort of bailout to go through. It's like sort of interrogation, you know. They've just said, no, we won't confess. And then they've had a few more lashes with the market whip and they've been told, you will cause bedlam if you don't rescue the world system. Market's down, biggest ever fall ever on Wall Street. And they'll come back on Thursday and they will pass something to deal with this bedlam that's going on.
Can I ask you, Stephen, why do you think it will turn around with a new president?
Well, I think Americans and the world have lost respect for George Bush. And it's just been 8 years of bedlam and poor mistakes and military misadventures and financial recklessness. And both the candidates are far higher calibre than Bush. And Americans want to turn to someone who they can respect, who can wipe the slate clean and do some hard, tough reforms, such as regulating the financial system, such as balancing the budget, all the things that Bush didn't do.
And they're not going to let him off easy to clean his slate before he goes.
Well, I think it doesn't look good to have this bailout, to have, you know, Hank Paulson, the former head of Goldman Sachs, leading a thinly explained bailout of Wall Street when he was tired of Wall Street, and having Bush to have one last final crazy, reckless, stupid policy dreamt up in a few days. It's just, you know, the Americans are meant to be leaders in politics and world finance, and it's a Mad Hatter's Tea Party over there at the moment. So
are there any other markets in the world whereby the bailout is working? Like, are people taking it more slowly and more carefully?
No, well, you've seen that the Americans lost $1.2 trillion in their dollar value of the market overnight, which is the first time we had a $1 trillion loss in one day. And, I mean, the Asian markets weren't off the full 7.7%. But I think most importantly, we're seeing the cascading banking crisis. So the Irish government's come out in the last half an hour and promised to guarantee the deposits of six key teetering Irish banks. And in early Irish trading tonight, they're all up sort of 20, 30, 40%. So you're just seeing progressive sort of nationalisation of deposit taking and home lending going on. The Dutch are doing it, the Belgians, the Germans have just shelled out 35 billion euro overnight to bail out one bank. So it's a global, you know, coordinated action by governments, and there'll also be coordinated cuts in interest rates. So we'll get probably a 50 basis point cut next week as the banks all get together and buy out troubled banks and cut the price of money and coordinate their responses, and they'll get it fixed. Whatever it takes to get it fixed, they'll get it fixed.
Tamara, what else is on the news tonight?
Well, given that that's such an immense story for the day, we're breaking it down into digestible chunks tonight. So we'll look at, firstly, what's happened on the Australian share market today. Then we're going to Canberra and the relative unanimity from Kevin Rudd and Malcolm Turnbull saying, look, there's tough times ahead, but given our budget surplus and tight regulations of banking in Australia, we should be fine. We're in the best position in the world here. Also looking at how the vote played out in Washington and the impact that it's had on markets around the world. And I guess it's a sign of the times too that Professor Ross Garnaut's photo op today with Kevin Rudd was shelved. He was meant to be photographed handing over his final report into emissions, and that had to be shelved, and he was basically buried today. But we will look at what he is recommending, and he's basically stuck by his initial recommendations for a 10% of 2000 levels by 2020.
Even though he thinks 25% would be better.
He does, and he's saying, well, you know, we should push for bigger cuts of 25% at discussions next year.
Tamara O'Dyne, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Look forward to seeing you on the telly.
Okay.
Interesting stuff. A text message here from Anita asking for you, Stephen, to please discuss ABC Learning announcements today. Stephen Mayne, of course, is your guest on Drive at the moment, 774 ABC Melbourne at 14 minutes to 6. No more Eddie Groves.
Yes, I caught a plane from the Gold Coast last week with Eddie. He was still sitting in the front row, but he's no longer sitting in the front row at ABC Learning. He's been
fired. You were obviously sitting in the front row too then.
I was sitting halfway down the back.
Right. And, but you made your way up to say hello.
No, he doesn't talk to me. I was going to go up and say, what happened to the $2 billion? How do you lose $2 billion providing childcare services when you're the most subsidised company in the country? But I thought it was a bit of an intimate environment on an aeroplane and I might get taken out. So left him alone. But it's good to see that he's been fired. His wife's also leaving the board and management positions as of today. The company still hasn't got out their accounts. They promised they'd have their accounts out by the end of September. Instead, when they failed to meet that deadline, they've instead fired the CEO who made that promise. And they've got a new interim CEO who used to run Colorado, a big retail company in Brisbane, so quite a good reputation. And I think the funniest thing is that they've got a new CFO, a new finance director, Peter Trimble, who will only start when the accounts have been finalised. So this new guy is not going to allow his reputation to be associated with the previous inaccurate, you know, misstated accounts. I mean, this is a company which claims it's worth $2.4 billion and the market says it's worth $300 million. So clearly they have to take a $2 billion write-down and admit, yes, we somehow lost $2 billion. And
how does that happen?
I know, it is bizarre. It's just, you know, ridiculous debt-fueled expansion into the US and the UK. And the other story today they announced was they were spending $70 million buying a job placement company called 123 Careers. And Eddie's had chaos in terms of having to pay huge costs to agencies, for agents to get temporary staff. Mm-hmm. And he sold the rights for ABC Learning job placement and temporary agency work for 10 years. So they sold it off for 10 years to this company. And now they're basically buying out the contract for $70 million to be able to better control their own staffing. So it is interesting that in the middle of a is this company solvent crisis, they've actually shelled out effectively $70 million today to get out of an onerous contract. They've put the new CEO in. So I do think they'll survive. They'll announce a massive loss. I do think they survive, and I'm amazed it's taken so long to fire Eddie Groves because, you know, you just don't destroy billions of dollars like that and hang around. I mean, why is he still there?
And what does it mean for the mums and dads whose kids are actually in childcare? What does it all mean at the ground level?
Well, hopefully it means a bit more stability will come in that we've now got a credible board. They have raised quite a bit of new capital. They will admit the errors of their way. They have shown some accountability with the people who were stuffed up. And I think it should be hopefully a less chaotic service with less temporary staff always coming in and more control of actually, you know, delivering more stable childcare services with their $1 million a day subsidy out of the federal government. So, I mean, for shareholders, it's been a disaster. It hasn't been well managed for parents. It's been fairly chaotically managed, putting together the world's biggest childcare company. And hopefully it'll all stabilise and settle down now.
Stephen, backtracking just slightly, we were talking with James Shugg in London, just as the London markets opened. James is a senior economist with Westpac Institutional. He was saying that one of the reasons why the US Congress bailout mightn't have happened was because of some sort of theory that the banks were getting bailed out and could possibly make a profit through the loopholes. Do you see any credence in that argument?
Oh, absolutely. The whole selling of the package was appallingly handled. Firstly, they shouldn't have said it was a bailout of Wall Street. I mean, it's not really a bailout of Wall Street. It's a bailout of the world financial system. Mm-hmm. And they've allowed it to be characterised as a specific bailout of all these banks in Wall Street, which is at one level it is. And then they had a massive backlash from Americans across the board, like particularly politicians in America who are facing marginal elections, who are in marginal seats, they tended to vote against. And there was a big campaign, you know, across African American radio networks, and many of the politicians in poorer states and constituencies voted against because they were worried they were going to be voted out in the forthcoming elections for bailing out Wall Street. So there certainly is, quite rightly, absolute anger about the people who created this mess being perceived to be rescued. But when you look at now the injury list or the death list of institutions around the world, clearly it is a global banking crisis. I mean, the Brits just took on another $110 billion in loans, with Bradford and Bingley falling over in the last couple of days. That's the taxpayers of Britain stepping in for $110 billion. So it's not a bailout of Wall Street as such. Wall Street is dead. The model of America running the world finances from Wall Street is gone.
It's
a multipolar world now. There's no way the world will ever give the Americans, and particularly all the investment banks, that the two that are surviving, because most of them have died, the chance to be the masters of the universe again, because they have so outrageously stuffed it.
Isn't that interesting? So by the time the election comes around, the American election comes around, their role as a financial superpower in the world will have gone. So in actual fact, it is a new world order that we're living through.
Well, I think we're going to see a more multipolar world. I mean, you don't create the world's biggest banking catastrophe. I mean, you just don't do that and continue to have be the ultimate policy creator and scene setter. You can't be the reserve currency if you do that. But I guess the most interesting thing is that the American government owes about $9 trillion of debt, and about half of that is owed to foreign investors. So the likes of the Chinese and the Japanese, who are the two biggest lenders to the Americans, they're in a difficult situation, because if they like pull the plug on the Americans and say, we're no longer going to keep investing in your bonds, your currency is going to keep crashing, then they take a huge haircut themselves. And you wouldn't want to be the president of China explaining to a billion Chinese how you've dropped hundreds of billions of dollars lending money to the Americans. So the world has to manage America's debt crisis. America is too big to crash, but the punishment ultimately will be that power will be dispersed financially, and the Wall Street investment banks won't be able to survive, and the Americans can't keep running a budget deficit of $500 billion a year and a trade deficit of $700 billion a year. It's just unsustainable.
You're a man of great extraordinary influence and reach. I have some text messages here wanting to know what stocks you bought today.
Oh, look, because I have 730 stocks in the portfolio, I just had to add new ones I didn't own. So you won't have heard
so
of any
just
of them.
Collect them.
Saunders, Hastings, High Yield, Templeton and Mine Makers. So, but I wanted to make a statement that I think it is a good buying opportunity and that you shouldn't panic too much.
You're not allowed to say. Yes, we're not allowed to advertise in terms of stocks. But it's just interesting in terms of the buying opportunities when stock market's falling.
Well, it is. I mean, today, the biggest crashes today were the big miners.
Right.
Which was like BHP was down 9.5% and Rio Tinto was down 11.5%. And the reason for that is that basically there's no such thing as diversification. Nothing is safe. There's nowhere to hide. So commodities are crashing. Property is crashing. Bonds are crashing, so the value of debt. Shares are crashing. So there isn't that traditional safe haven. Traditionally, you just go US bonds. You go, well, in a time of crisis, US bonds. But now you can't go to US bonds because it's the Americans who are imploding. So there is nowhere to hide, and that's why our banks actually perform better today than the miners, because everyone's going, commodities boom is over. We can't sustain these massively high coal and iron ore prices, so the big miners are going to crash, and that's been what's made Australia so strong in the last little period. So if you're looking for a safe haven, it's, I don't know, not cash under the bed, but it's pretty scary.
Meanwhile, you've got both Kevin Rudd and Malcolm Turnbull. Well, Malcolm Turnbull calling for a bipartisan approach to all of this. What do you think of these bipartisan approaches? Do you think that's hedging your bets?
Well, I think,
or do you think you just have to be sensible?
Well, I think you really should have had bipartisanship in the US. But the amazing thing, I mean, this is a statistic that I just can't believe, is that when a US president and a Treasury Secretary appointed by the Republicans in Hank Paulson put up a proposal that's supported by the Leader of the House and the Leader of the Senate, and then can only deliver one-third of Republican votes to that.
Mm.
Imagine that in the context of Australia.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, that means that there is a massive revolt
against
within,
the president. Yeah.
Against the president. The president no longer commands any respect,
none,
even amongst his
own party,
most loyal politicians in the Houses of Parliament in America.
It's almost Morris Yemma-esque.
It is. Morris Yemma would, you know, would
almost.
I'm sure they'd love to have as much support as Morris Yemma had.
He's good. Come from lame duck to dead duck, hasn't he? Really?
Poor Morris Yemma. Yes.
I don't. No, I don't mean Morris. I mean.
Oh, Tom thinks George. It's the end of capitalism.
Oh, I think it's the end of unregulated capitalism. It's the end of unregulated hedge funds, and you're going to see it's the end of the shadow banking system. You are going to see a mightily regulated global banking system from here on in, with a very, very big government component to it.
Another really important text message that's come in for you, Mary Jane. Why is St Kilda so slow heading south?
There are a couple of crashes in St Kilda.
There you go, not just at the stock market. There are crashes everywhere. Hello, Derek Gill.
Hello, Libby Gill. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. What are you thinking about?
I'm being pensive. I'm feeling a bit pensive, a bit thoughtful. No, see, last night we were
Stephen
talking...
Stephen does that.
He does that to me, yeah. No, every time Steve and I get together, we just talk about Richmond and we get pensive, come to think of it.
That's where you're channelling this suppressed anger, Stephen, as a Richmond supporter. Now hey, I understand you.
No, there's no anger there because Richo came third, equal third, in the Brownlow. That's how, you know, we did better than most people.
Okay.
Still 27 years of hell for us, though, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, isn't that exactly how long there was a coalition government before 1972? Was it 27 years?
I think that's right.
It could be Richmond
all
next year.
All things end after 27 years. Yes, all droughts end.
You know, it might be Rosh Hashanah and it might be the end of Ramadan today, but it is also the start of Dasara, which is the 10-day Hindu festival that's starting today. So it is. At least the thought patterns are in sync. The religious, spiritual beliefs are in sync. If it can flood through into the stock market and the football field, everyone will be happy.
I think so.
How do you like that?
I think so. That's a good idea. It's an interesting theory.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, no, it's not my idea. It's an interesting theory, and we'll see what happens.
That's because it's 4 minutes to six.
And I have been thinking about the reaction that I heard on Talkback overnight in the letters to the editor and Talkback during today and indeed last night, people's reactions to the Productivity Commission's assessment of what would be a good paid parental leave scheme for Australia. One of the things from a number of people was I'm a single person, why should my taxes pay for new babies?
I'm illiterate. I'm illiterate. Why should my taxes pay for libraries?
Yeah, there's an interesting...
don't swim. Should there be swimming pools?
The bigger picture for me
I don't make rubbish. Why should there be bin collection?
Exactly. And my question is, have we become so much an I am community that the whole spirit, the whole idea of communities doing things to prepare for their futures and look after them has been being left to the legislators, and that communities themselves aren't seeing their role and don't clearly understand their role of nurturing, of preparing, of building for the future? Because the children we're talking about are the ones who will be working when I'm retired. They're the ones who we're entrusting the future of the world into their hands. So where is the love? What are those communities that are getting it right, that are looking after each other, that are planning for their future and caring and supporting and all that sort of stuff?
In actual fact, my understanding of happy societies is that everyone benefits from a society that's working better on an emotional level anyway, because somehow or another you're going to have to pay for the emotional health of society through welfare payments or through hospital care. So ultimately it's organic. It's not just segmented into I'm a single person, I don't have children.
Yeah, but are we? That's my question. Have we become so segmented, just like an orange?
I'm so glad you'll be talking about it.
Yeah.
I hope you give a few squirts.
Well, I'm looking for, and not all of them are in the eye.
What do you think, Tamara?
Maybe a lemon.
Tamara.
Mary
Jane.
Mary Jane.
I'm so sorry.
Well, if you are in St Kilda, there is some traffic delays. In St Kilda on Lock Avenue near Orong Road, there is a crash, and there's another in Windsor on Andrew Street near Kent Street. And you're also going to find Punt Road extremely heavy all the way back to Swan Street. There is roadworks at Johnston Street intersection where the right turning lane is closed, so there are long delays, expected to take you over an hour to get to the Eastern Freeway from Swan Street.
Thank you, Mary Jane.
Thank you.
Apologise. Call me Lindy. It's okay. Stephen, what do you think? Do you use the library or shouldn't you have to pay for it?
We should have libraries and don't panic. Okay. It's a good buying opportunity.
It's coming up to... Stop it. It's coming up to news time very shortly and probably now.